Good morning, and welcome to the Greater Good Magazine. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being, and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. 8 questions that can help you survive election stress. Americans are stressed out by their presidential election. These questions will help you check in with yourself and perhaps boost your resilience. By Jeremy Adam Smith and Jill Suddy. September 19th, 2024. How are you doing? For many Americans, that question can feel fraught. According to the American Psychiatric Association's annual mental health survey, U.S. adults are more anxious than ever. In 2024, 43% of adults say that they feel more anxious than they did the previous year, up from 37% in 2023 and 32% in 2022, reports the APA. 3/4 of respondents identified this year's presidential election as one of the biggest causes of their anxiety. According to a new survey from the nonpartisan organization More in Common, about 71% of Americans expect more politically motivated violence. What can we do to stay resilient in the face of this election? One way is to check in with ourselves daily, to make sure that we're doing the things that sustain our health and well-being, while remaining empowered to make a positive impact on the election itself. To come up with reflective questions to ask yourself, we look back on our articles about surviving stressful times, and we consulted psychologists affiliated with the Greater Good Science Center. We hope these questions will help you make it through the election and beyond. Number 1, what's happening in my body and mind today? Sometimes our feelings sneak up on us and our body can experience emotions before our conscious mind is aware of them. That's no surprise. The body is a big place with a lot going on inside of it, so you might break your inquiry down into even more specific questions, as suggested by UC Berkeley's Dr. Keltner and Colorado State's Michael Steger. Is the election disrupting my sleep? Is it interfering with my ability to concentrate? Do I feel breathless or feel any pressure in my chest? You can also look to your mind for information. Is the election bringing back bad memories, for example, of abusive men in your life? Do thoughts of the election intrude or arise when you wish that they wouldn't? Do you find yourself thinking of the election even when you would rather be thinking about other things? Answering these questions for yourself, or perhaps with another person like your spouse or a good friend, will help you to understand what you're feeling, particularly if those feelings were happening below conscious awareness. This allows you to name emotions like anger, grief, or anxiety, and naming them as a first step toward feeling more in control of your life. Number two, if I'm feeling distress, what can I do to soothe myself? When you have named your negative emotions, it's important to not feel bad about having them. When UC Berkeley researchers studied more than 1,300 adults in a 2017 study, they found that people who commonly resist acknowledging their darkest emotions or judge them harshly can end up feeling more psychologically stressed. In other words, please try to avoid feeling bad about the election. Instead of pushing down any negative feelings, ask what you can do to soothe yourself. Therapist Linda Graham suggests these techniques for calming yourself down even when everything feels like it's too much. First of all, breathing. Deep belly breathing activates the parasympathetic branch of your autonomic nervous system and slows down your reactivity. Breathing slowly, deeply can de-escalate a full-blown panic attack in a matter of minutes. Remember to breathe throughout the day de-stresses you and helps to instill calm as your real baseline, not stress as the new normal. Secondly, she suggests, hand on the heart. Neural cells around the heart activate during stress. Your warm hand on your heart calms those neurons down again, often in less than a minute. Hand on the heart works especially well when you breathe positive thoughts, feelings, images of safety and trust, ease, and goodness into your heart at the same time. And third, meditation. Sylvia Boorstein's book, Don't Just Do Something, Sit There, speaks to our instinctive and socialized tendencies to do, to act, as in fight or flight. Follow her instructions on compassionate mindfulness meditation is a gentle way to calm the mind and body and let things simply be. Over time, generating a steady inner calm that sustains you over the long haul. You can also do things like just asking for a hug. We are hardwired to be soothed by touch, writes Graham. Warm, safe touch is a stress reducer because it primes the brain to release oxytocin, the hormone of safety and trust, of calm and connect. Oxytocin is the brain's direct and immediate antidote to the stress hormone cortisol. If there is no one you can touch right now, call a friend. They might be struggling too. 3. Am I getting enough good news? We may think that by staying abreast of the latest news developments, we get a clear-eyed picture of the world. But there's a problem. The news is overwhelmingly negative. That's because news sources assume there's more money to be made by featuring alarmist headlines, which keep our eyes on the page, due to our brain's negativity bias, by hijacking our attention. Repeatedly consuming negative news stories is detrimental to our health. It keeps us in a constant state of alert, which is damaging to our bodies. It can also tear at our social fabric, leading to more distrust and negative feelings about other people and communities. We can also miss a lot of the good in the world. To keep up what's happening in the world without being overwhelmed by it, we need to be conscientious about counterbalancing negative news with more positive, hopeful news. Of course, greater good is a good place to start, as we tend to feature the more positive aspects of human nature and how to decrease the negative. But you can also look to places like the Solutions Journalism Network, an organization that encourages in-depth journalism, highlighting not just problems, but the people and programs finding solutions. 4. When do I feel good about the election? Here's another way to counter all of the negativity. Michael Steger suggests searching for evidence in the news or in the world around you that there are still good people. When do you find yourself tearing up or smiling? Who is working for goals that you think are important? Who seems to be effective and successful? Where are the solutions? Perhaps you heard a speech that inspired you, or maybe you read about a court decision that makes you breathe a sigh of relief. It could be that a candidate's platform gives you hope, but hope could also come in a gracious moment when you see a candidate do or say the right thing. When you find good news, then let yourself feel good about it. You're searching for moral elevation. That's the warm feeling we get when we witness someone engage in courageous acts. Moral elevation not only boosts our positive emotions, but it also promotes our love of our fellow man and inspires us to be better people, says University of Portland researcher Serena Saturn. Indeed, making an effort to experience more moral elevation will restore our faith in humanity and encourage us to help other people. Moral elevation is also contagious. In one 2011 study, for example, participants read articles and watched videos depicting acts of common or uncommon kindness. And the results show that hearing about these good deeds made the participants more likely to give away their money. Moral elevation has been shown to promote altruism, Saturn says. So, make an effort to shine some light on some of the wonderful things the human condition is capable of doing. 5. What am I grateful for today? This may seem like the wrong question for the times. With so much negative stuff going on, why focus on what we're grateful for? But as gratitude researcher Robert Emmons writes, in the face of demoralization, gratitude has the power to energize. In the face of brokenness, gratitude has the power to heal. In the face of despair, gratitude has the power to bring hope. Focusing on what we're thankful for helps us to be more resilient when times are tough. If we turn toward appreciating the good in our lives, it lessens our anxiety and depression, so we can stay calmer in the face of uncertainty, and it can keep us from burning out. Gratitude is also a premier social emotion that binds us to other people, strengthening our relationships. Cultivating it in ourselves inspires us to help others in need, even when giving help is costly to us. Something that we could use in these difficult times when we need to come together. So, what can you be grateful for? Besides the everyday things like family, health, the food on our table, or a beautiful sunset, we can be grateful for living in a democracy where we get a vote. You might be thankful for the many activists who secured suffrage for women and African Americans. In the present, you might feel gratitude for the groups now marching in the streets, calling attention to social and environmental wrongs and demanding change. 6. How can I connect with other people? Yes, this election is stressful, and stress can trigger the fight or flight reaction. It's natural to feel angry or defensive, or to simply want to run away, but there's more to stress than this simple dichotomy. Researchers Laura Cusino Klein and Shelley Taylor have identified another kind of response to stressful events. Tend and befriend, when people can become more trusting, generous, and willing to risk their own well-being to protect others. Why would stress lead to caring? As Kelly McGonigal writes in Greater Good, from an evolutionary point of view, we have the tend and befriend response in our repertoire first and foremost to make sure we protect our offspring. Think of a mama grizzly protecting her cubs, or a father pulling his son from the wreckage of a burning car. The most important thing they need is the willingness to act even when their own lives are at risk. To make sure we have the courage to protect our loved ones, the tend and befriend response must counter our basic survival instinct to avoid harm. We need fearlessness in those moments, along with confidence that our actions can make a difference. If we think that there's nothing we can do, we might give up. And if we are frozen in fear, our loved ones will perish. At its core, the tend and befriend response is a biological state engineered to reduce fear and increase hope. In facing this year's election and the barriers imposed by COVID-19, don't let your stress cut you off from others. Allison Briscoe Smith, a clinician at the Wright Institute, suggests aiming to move from self-care to community care. In other words, yes, take care of yourself first, but when you feel strong enough, reach out to those in need and ask, what is one small tangible thing you can do to help someone feel better today? 7. In light of this election, what are some new ways I can use my special skills or talents to make a difference in the broader world? When UC Claremont's Kendall Bronk and her colleagues studied youth during the 2016 election, they found that the election actually inspired purpose. People saw problems in the broader world and they were inspired to take action, she says. This might help explain the surge in political activism that we've seen in the past 4 years, from the student-led movement for greater gun safety to Black Lives Matter protests. Jim Emmerman of Encore.org, an organization that helps seniors find new purpose in life, suggests 3 questions to help you find your own sense of purpose. What are you good at? What have you done that gave you a skill that can be used for a cause? What do you care about in your community? Purpose. The drive to make a difference in the world is intimately related to meaning, a sense of what's happened to you and around you matters in some way. While the ultimate outcome of the election will change its meaning, we won't stop trying to make sense of what happened. When Michael Steger studied college students' experiences from the 2016 election and the 2018 midterm elections, he found that their sense of meaning did decline if their candidate lost, but then seemed to rebound within a week. There's meaning in loss and purpose too, if you can find a way to put your talents to work in making a difference beyond just one election. 8. What future would I like to see, and what steps am I taking today to make that future happen? Greater Good Science Center Senior Fellow Christine Carter suggests thinking now about how you're going to take care of your own well-being over the long run. What healthy habit are you nurturing now that will be with you after the election? What do you have in your life right now because of this tumultuous time that you hope to still have in your life later? Those might seem like hard questions to ask yourself, and it might seem even harder right now to think of our collective well-being in the future. But when we look to the future, a process scientists call prospection, the present moment actually becomes more meaningful. Though it might be hard right now to think beyond November the 3rd, it's worth trying. Numerous studies show that envisioning a positive future makes it more likely to come to pass, and prospection can make us more resilient in the present. But how? In Greater Good's Purpose Challenge, designed by Bronk and her team, high school seniors were asked to think about the world around them and visualize what they would change if they had a magic wand. Afterward, the researchers asked the students to map out steps they could take toward that ideal. What would you change if you had a magic wand? Perhaps you wish people would just be kinder to each other. Or maybe you think wealthy people should have less power in government and poor people should have more. If economic and social disparities between white people and everyone else enrage you, then a future of racial equality is what you want most. If you were outraged by the former president's misogynistic comments about women, you might feel driven to spend the next 4 years working for gender equality. A positive future depends on many different people working for many different goals for the betterment of humankind. We don't have a magic wand, and we don't know what will happen on November the 5th, but we do know that there will be a November 6th, and we know that we are all going to have to get out of bed and do what we can to make the world a better place, no matter who is in the White House. We might feel powerless, but we're not. We can vote, we can donate money, and march. And we can help people whose lives we touch. And maybe 4 years from now, when we ask a neighbor or a coworker or a friend how they are doing, they'll be able to say, great. About the authors. Jeremy Adam Smith edits the Greater Good Science Center's online magazine, Greater Good. He is also the author or co-editor of 5 books, including The Daddy Shift, Are We Born Racist?, and most recently, The Gratitude Project, How the Science of Thankfulness Can Rewire Our Brains for Resilience, Optimism, and the Greater Good. Before joining the Greater Good Science Center, Jeremy was a John S. Knight Journalism Fellow at Stanford University. And Jill Suddy, Doctor of Psychology, is Greater Good's former book review editor and now serves as a staff writer and contributing editor for the magazine. She received her doctorate of psychology from the University of San Francisco in 1998 and was a psychologist in private practice before coming to Greater Good. You have been listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, bringing you Greater Good Magazine. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. Thank you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.